Advertising your business with GCN is simple, effective,
and more affordable than you might think.
Visit advertise.gcnlive.com for more info. Take your business to the next level.
The gold standard of paranormal radio. And now, here's Gene Steinberg.
I was wondering here, before we started the show, whether Skype hates anybody. Because our guest, Micah Hanks, was telling us that he was having a problem getting a Skype connection. And I thought for a second, could Skype be playing favorites? But it is working now, right, Micah?
I think it is, Gene. Yes, here we are back in the game for another round. Always good to be back with you guys. Whatever the medium we're using may be, let's just hope it behaves, huh?
Well, I'm thinking it this way. It's going through multiple generations of reality.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true.
It's like the movie Arrival, where this woman plays a linguist and she learns that E.T. communicates across time. Remember that?
Yeah, it was a fascinating concept that they presented in that film, you know, which really kind of stretches the mind and the sense of what would contact be like. And I have to say, we often are so fixated on what extraterrestrials or any other kind of intelligence we might encounter, whether they are, you know, flesh and blood entities or something else. We often fixate, I think, in science fiction on what they would look like. But that film took it to a different level with enhancing, I think, the whole concept through linguistic ideas in terms of how would our minds respond to learning an alien language. In other words, having to essentially learn to think to an extent how another form of intelligence thinks and has evolved to think. So, yeah, it was kind of a different dimension on the contact experience and arguably one of the better films that's come out in recent years. I hope you guys liked it. I liked it.
It is a bit of a mind twister. You have to figure out what they do. The only downside, I think, if E.T. is advanced enough to get here, they'd figure a way to talk to us without having to go through all this rigmarole.
They might. You know, that's an interesting one, Gene, because in a lot of the recent dialogue, which I'm sure you guys have followed like I have, there's been a lot of speculation about UFOs, or UAP as they are preferentially called these days, or as I like to jokingly say, the artists formerly known as UFOs. But of course, there's all this discussion about, well, what does this represent? Interestingly, there have been a lot of people recently who have kind of come into this. I think they're really longtime closet UFO believers or enthusiasts, but they stop as far as what they think it is. They merely say, we acknowledge there's a phenomena. And now that it's okay to say that, they've kind of come out and said, yeah, it's time we start taking this seriously. But leave all that little green men speculation, all those conspiracy theories about aliens, leave that at the door. We're only talking about UAP here. Again, to me, it's funny because like you're talking about there, E.T. getting here and being able to communicate with us. I've also seen a lot of, especially, you know, members of the popular science community, these being, you know, popular science educators, Neil deGrasse Tyson, what have you, and they've all basically said the same thing. You know, Seth Shostak also. If E.T. were any part of this equation, and if they had gotten here, the idea that they would come here and not try to reach out, not try to communicate with us, just seems impossible. And so they use that, similar to what you're saying there, Gene, as an argument for why they don't think E.T. is a component related to the modern UFO issue. So I find it interesting the way that that argument is kind of appropriated for different ideologies and different ideological perspectives in the current UAP debate.
Well, the thing you watch here is that why should E.T. contact us? Not saying they haven't already done so, because people have said that. Why should they contact us? What motivation would they have? Because that represents an egocentric view on our part, that if we're being visited, the first thing they want to do is say hello. And if they did say hello, whom would they trust to impart their message, to communicate? Would they talk to governments? Would they talk to Joe Simonton in some place in Wisconsin and want to give them some of their pancakes? I mean, what would they do? And at this point, I think before we get to step B, which is why are they not contacting us, assuming they're not, what are they and why are they here? What is here? What is the phenomenon? And then we can worry about that. Because exactly. We're at being asked to interpret what an alien mind might do, just like we're talking about Arrival, where their method of communication, the aliens, was very totally different from ours, and somehow they had to find a way to communicate, which is why this woman who was part of the whole picture was brought into play. The thing, of course, is they chose Lois Lane to be their point of communication. That's because Amy Adams played Lois Lane in the Snyderverse versions of Superman. But anyway, the point being here is I still think that if E.T. is smart enough to get here, communicating with us would be possible. They'd figure a way to do it. Number two, and this is the thing we don't talk about, they would protect themselves from our alien viruses. And that brings the War of the Worlds scenario. Movie in the novel War of the Worlds. How do we defeat E.T., which is super powerful? And the answer is we couldn't. But they fell victim to the common cold because they weren't smart enough to check for local microbes. Now, maybe when the book was written in the 1890s, this was not something that they'd consider. But now we assume they'd consider it. They look to see if there's any potential of infection for themselves. I don't know if they care about us. Or if they were smart enough, they would. They don't want us to be infected, nor do they want to be infected. So they'd take care of that. That would be the second thing. But we never talk about that.
Right. Yeah, you can start to see when we have a conversation like this. It's a great tool, I think, for helping us, you know, play the what-if game, you know, to create kind of at least layman's thought experiments where we can stretch our minds to new possibilities. And, of course, if it's, you know, a film-going experience or even back in the days of radio or a book for that matter, is going to, you know, give you a visual or an auditory kind of mind-expanding, non-hallucinatory experience where one can step outside of reality and have a speculative encounter with aliens. But we can't help but anthropomorphize any idea that a human mind generates about what E.T. might be like. And that's really the inherent problem with the whole science fiction approach toward guessing about what E.T. might be. And yet, as you mentioned, with films like Arrival, with, again, first books, then radio plays, and then films like War of the Worlds, these have inherently colored the way that we as people think about the idea of extraterrestrial life. You know, some astronomers who are far more on the skeptical side when it comes to the possible existence of alien life, I personally think is out there. Most astrobiologists and astronomers seem to also, in terms of the vastness of the universe, it must be out there, they would say. But there are some who are like, life may be far more special. It could be that we are indeed alone. And if that were the case, I find that highly unlikely. But in that context, those extremely skeptical astronomers might further argue that, therefore, the whole idea of E.T. is a concept born out of the human mind, which is kind of strange to think about if you consider it from that perspective. I actually find that unlikely. But however you cut it, we tend to anthropomorphize our expectations about E.T. if it exists and what it would be like.
Well, if they are here, we have to go back to the point of life in the universe. And more, we're saying more and more of these exoplanets we discover, more and more out there, have the conditions for life. And therefore, it's very likely some kind of life may have developed there. So what kind of life would it be? Well, if the building blocks that we see here are duplicated there, then probably something that would not be dissimilar to the kind of life forms we have here.
Right.
So at that point, we can say that maybe it's inevitable that something humanoid would be a practical way for life to develop. Of course, there could be lots of happy accidents along the way, as we assume we have here, that we're here because of those happy accidents or unhappy accidents, depending on your point of view. And therefore, it would be life that we would recognize as life.
Right.
Okay. And we're going to recognize this. We have Micah Hanks joining us. He is with a publication called Debrief, all right, which is a fascinating concept. They send out a newsletter every so often with their latest developments, so I keep track of it. Really worth checking out. We've got more to come with Gene and Randall and Micah. You're in
the Paracast.
Hey, listeners. I want you to have the entire Paracast experience. So I'd like to tell you about After the Paracast. After the Paracast is an exclusive feature for subscribers to the Paracast Plus. With After the Paracast, you never know what's going to happen next. After the Paracast features color commentary, special interviews, and further conversations with Paracast guests. With Paracast Plus, you can download a very special enhanced version of the Paracast also. We do offer exclusive music, videos, and more features are coming. To get more info about subscribing, please visit theparacast.plus. Once again, theparacast.plus. Prices are just $1.50 a week, less than a cup of coffee at your local convenience store. Check out theparacast.plus to learn more about Paracast Plus.
Right now, millions of Americans have an uneasy feeling about the future. That's why they're quietly stockpiling as much emergency food as they can. What about you? Do you have enough emergency food to get you through a prolonged crisis? If not, take a moment to shop My Patriot Supply. We're America's leader in emergency preparedness and survival. Since 2008, we've served several million American families like yours. In fact, our mission is your survival. So head on over to MyPatriotSupply.com and grab a few of our tasty emergency food kits. Our food stays fresh for up to 25 years in storage and is shipped quickly and discreetly to your door. One day, you might be eating breakfast, lunch, or dinner while everyone else is standing in a food line. Avoid that. It's too late to act once the other shoe drops. It's time to be self-reliant and prepared. And now you can. Go to MyPatriotSupply.com. MyPatriotSupply.com.
We've all seen and perhaps use the alcohol-based hand sanitizers. Have you noticed how it dries your skin, and as soon as the alcohol evaporates, it's no longer effective? GCNteam.com has alcohol-free antibacterial soap and foam, meeting or exceeding all requirements set forth by the United States Food and Drug Administration. Come to GCNteam.com, keyword antibacterial, or call 877-878-4203.
Stop aging now. Restore those joints. Boost your strength. Because it's official. NutraMedical has released the most exciting, powerful anti-aging supplement on the market. Dr. Bill Deagle's Red Deer Velvet DR has been approved by the U.S. Patent Office. Imagine stem cell rejuvenation all in one capsule without huge expense. Dr. Bill MD discovered that as an unborn baby grows in the mother's womb, he or she does not deteriorate or physically age. Red Deer Velvet DR, like the uterus, provides 300 biomolecules and 6 hormones protected in one special DR capsule that delivers lipid packages directly into your circulation. This patented technology bypasses the stomach and is released into the small bowel unaltered by digestive enzymes and stomach acid. Remember, Red Deer Velvet DR. Improve endurance, stimulate your immune system, increase learning ability, and even improve sexual libido with Red Deer Velvet DR. Click NutriMedical.com. That's NutriMedical.com. Or call toll-free 888-212-8871 and get on the road to a newer, rejuvenated, happier you.
A lot can happen in 6 seconds. A rodeo ride, a dramatic basketball win, and the world record holder can solve a Rubik's Cube. 6 seconds is how long it takes for an 18-wheeler traveling at a safe speed to come to a complete stop. And in those 6 seconds, that truck will travel the length of 2 football fields. So please, give them room. Never cut in front of a large truck for any reason. Our roads, our responsibility. Learn more at sharetheroadsafely.gov.
We'd like to hear from you. If you have a comment or question about the Paracast, send it to news@theparacast.com. That's news@theparacast.com. And don't forget to visit our famous Paracast community forums at forum.theparacast.com.
Micah Hanks is with us, and we're going one step beyond the Pentagon. That's UAP, formerly known as UFO, formerly known as Flying Saucer Task Force Report. I had to get Flying Saucer in there, Micah. Yeah, right? Inevitably. And we're talking about the possibility of alien life, and if alien life exists, what form would it take? Would it be like ours? because the building blocks of life may be the same or similar, would they communicate as we do or in ways that we can't even comprehend? And would they have their own COVID vaccines to protect themselves from earthly viruses?
Yeah, you know, you raised some really interesting points right there, Gene. And in the context of the current pandemic, which we all constantly hear about and people actually hope to have an escape from, so we won't dwell on it. But back to the point that some have raised about why would alien intelligence of any kind come all the way to Earth and then not make contact? I couldn't imagine a better explanation than COVID-19. And if we follow the whole logic of War of the Worlds, you know, that viruses might indeed be alien viruses at that, potentially deadly to organisms that are maybe not unlike us in terms of how they evolved and the same, you know, amino acids and building blocks, the simple proteins which over time culminated in life on another world. If they came here from said world and are actually a lot more like us than we would expect, and they are just as potentially compromisable by exposure to pathogens as humans are, maybe more so, then of course they're not going to try and come down, say hi, shake hands, and interact with us in the middle of a pandemic. Now, again, this is all speculation, but I would argue that really the premise there maybe is of some merit that if indeed we were to be visited at any time, or if we are currently being visited, that is indeed still one option that's on the table with regard to UAP, after all, it may not be so far-fetched that they would indeed keep a distance.
Let me ask you something, Mike. Like, just to get the foundation here set for this conversation, I'm not sure I actually really know the answer yet. Do you believe that alien visitation is a physical reality? Or are you still one of the skeptics who are on the fence and you just don't know?
Well, that's a good question, Randall. By the way, let me say it's great to talk to both you guys. Always a pleasure to be here on the Paracast with you both. But as far as where I am on the likelihood of an extraterrestrial hypothesis as an explanation for UAP phenomena or UFOs, I kind of take the Kevin Randall approach. I like calling them UFOs still, and we can get into that. But you'll hear me preferentially, you know, kind of go back and forth as needed and use UAP or UFOs. I've already done it plenty of times in this conversation. As far as the ET component on that, I am willing to hold that at arm's length until there is more definitive proof of that, but I also can sympathize to an extent with the long-held hopefuls who say, look, at this point, what better explanation is there? I would say that, again, there is some merit to the ET hypothesis and proponents of it who say this is simply the best explanation that we have at the current time, and it therefore perhaps is a useful model to work within in terms of trying to understand UAP. But I guess I gravitate a little more toward the notion that if we don't have clear, unequivocal evidence that points to an extraterrestrial source, we have to thereby be willing to consider other alternatives. That's pretty much where I am right now. And it's frustratingly vague for a lot of people, but let me just point out, often when you're trying to approach a subject, you know, scientifically, which I do try to do as a layman with this subject and others that I'm interested in, I think that it requires a certain bit of, yes, skepticism, but not in the sense of I have made up my mind what I think it is, and I'm going to make an argument and pick out facts that support what I believe, which unfortunately I think those on the far end of the debunking side of skepticism today often do. There are plenty of really good skeptics out there. I count myself among them. I don't know if you'd call me a good one per se, but you know, in my opinion, a good skeptic is someone who withholds their judgment until they've got good evidence to support a conclusion. So I'm waiting for better evidence. I'm certainly analyzing the phenomena. I haven't made any definite conclusions, but I can understand the sympathies people have for the ET hypothesis in terms of a working model that helps us potentially explain UAP / UFOs.
When we start getting into more exotic conclusions, multiverse, time travelers, it's a more difficult concept to sell. And if it's something like collective unconscious or the co-creation theory, that's so far out there that I don't think the average person, not because of intelligence or anything, is prepared or equipped to deal with it. But if you just say something's out there, it's doing things that we can't duplicate. And right now, the simplest thing would be ET, because that's the way our society is currently constituted.
Right. I'll just take a moment here to touch on a couple of the other alternative hypotheses that you raised there. And Randall, I know that you'd also mentioned there was a lot to unpack. Maybe this will help with the unpacking process. Again, if we look back through time, and you guys know how I love history. Gene, I know you do too when it comes to this subject. And Gene, frankly, actually has been with this for so many years. He is, in my opinion, a part of the history of this subject, which is why it's so great to talk about this with you guys. But as far as the beginning of the so-called UFO phenomena, as it emerged in America, when we go back to 1947, and I actually like the earlier than 1947 accounts, many of which describe UAP or UFOs very similar to how we would recognize them in the decades that followed. You know, maybe going back to 1943, 1942, and not just Foo Fighters. Some were seen here over the United States as well and other parts of the world. But when we began to culturally recognize UFOs after the famous Kenneth Arnold sighting and then the sightings that began to occur and appear in the American media shortly thereafter, once this phenomenon emerged into the public consciousness and it was thereby recognized as a phenomenon, proceeding forward from that point, it was a very short time before, of course, the U.S. Air Force became involved. Initially, everyone thinks, well, must be Soviet technology. Project Sign looks at it under the U.S. Air Force, their first operation to, you know, systematically look at this. And they come up with this famous estimate of the situation, which at least suggests we can't account for this as far as earthly technology goes. We have to be open to other possibilities. And so top brass in Washington, as everybody knows here, didn't like the insinuation that it might be extraterrestrial. But I bring that up to point out that that was really one of the first alternative, i.e. non-earthly hypotheses that was, you know, really presented, really, I think, to any significant degree, and of course within an official capacity with regard to what UFOs may be. But we'd already seen that insinuation in newspaper accounts from around that time, too. And people were making fun of Kenneth Arnold and saying that he saw Martians and all kinds of things. So the ET idea had already been in our culture, again, going back to sci-fi, prior to Kenneth Arnold. And so when Kenneth Arnold says he sees flying saucers, people made fun of him, the doubters, and they'd already been making alien jokes at that time. And again, the ET hypothesis was further driven home by Donald Kehoe throughout the following decade, the 1950s, especially into the 1960s with the, you know, founding and the proliferation of NICAP as a civilian investigative committee. But then when we get to the 1960s and guys like Vallée, who had already, you know, really been working the ET angle for years with J. Allen Hynek and others, they start looking at it and saying, maybe we should take a different approach. And we see books like Passport to Magonia and others that really start to kind of, you know, again, I think Jerry Clark referred to that as being a fracture point in UFO ideology, where the ET proponents and then those who were taking a more metaphysical approach opened to different possibilities. We see that kind of split begin right there. And, of course, there have been other ideas that are presented over the years, like time travel, you know, ultra-dimensionals like John Keel talked about. But here's the thing. Coming back to your point, Gene.
He's come back to our point, and we're to come back to these points and get back with Micah, Gene, and Randall. You're in
the Paracast.
Thank you for listening to GCN. Be sure to visit GCNLive.com today.
Silver has always been nature's very own antibiotic, and only one system allows you to generate an endless supply of natural silver solutions, SilverLungs.com. You'll find no wild claims or pseudoscience, just a lifetime of nano-sized pure silver solutions. The Silver Lungs generator allows you to make your own, so stop paying for silver solutions. The unique lung delivery system targets respiratory infections where other silver solutions simply cannot reach. See the Silver Lungs generator and lung delivery system at SilverLungs.com. That's SilverLungs.com.
Are you afraid to go to the mailbox because of letter after letter from the IRS? Are they stacking on more and more penalties and interest? By now, you know the problem won't go away on its own. Don't let the IRS chase you to your grave with penalties and interest and liens and levies. You need real help now. I'm Dan Pilla. I wrote the book on tax debt settlement, and I help thousands of people solve tax problems they thought couldn't be solved. I can help you too. Call 800-34-NO-TAX or go to my website, danpilla.com. That's danpilla.com. Danpilla.com.
USA Radio News with Dan Naraki.
Officials in Haiti say that hundreds are dead following a strong earthquake that struck the island on Saturday. The 7.2 magnitude quake was centered about 75 miles west of the capital of Port-au-Prince. Officials say at least 304 people have died and more than 1,800 have been injured, with Prime Minister Ariel Henry saying he was working to rush aid to areas devastated by the quake, as some towns had almost completely been razed. He also declared a month-long state of emergency for the entire country. And the number of children hospitalized with COVID-19 in the U.S. has reached a new record high, with just over 1,900 as of Saturday. Health officials blame the rapid spread of the Delta variant, along with children under 12 unable to receive a vaccination, for the rise in serious cases. Children now make up about 2.5% of the total COVID patients in American hospitals. You're listening to USA Radio News. A pair of governors are talking about how they're handling rising COVID cases in their states. Wendy King reports.
The governor of Oregon, Kate Brown, is calling up the National Guard to assist with putting up temporary hospitals due to the rapid spike of COVID-19.
To support our hospitals overstretched by patients during the Delta surge.
While the governor of Mississippi, Tate Reeves, says he won't impose a mask mandate and won't push people to get vaccinated.
There are risks associated with taking the vaccine. There are risks associated with not taking the vaccine.
From the USA Radio News Pacific Northwest Bureau, I'm Wendy King.
It is the remnants of what was Tropical Storm Fred move into the Gulf of Mexico. Another tropical storm has formed in the eastern Caribbean Sea. Grace is expected to bring heavy rainfall to the greater and lesser Antilles, with tropical storm warnings in effect for areas like Antigua and Barbuda, St. Kitts and Nevis, the U.S. and British Virgin Islands, and Puerto Rico. This is USA Radio News.
Tahibo Tea Club's original Pure Pau D'Arco Super Tea comes from the only tree in the world that fungus doesn't grow on. As a result, it naturally has antifungal, anti-infection, antiviral, antibacterial, anti-inflammation, and anti-parasite properties. So the tea is great for healthy people because it helps build the immune system, and it can truly be miraculous for someone fighting a potentially life-threatening disease due to an infection, diabetes, or cancer. A one-pound package of tea is $34.95 plus shipping. To order, please visit shopsupertea.com. That's shop, S-H-O-P, super, S-U-P-E-R, T-T-E-A.com. So the complete website is shopsupertea.com. Or call us at 818-984-6100 Monday through Saturday, 9 to 5 California time. That's shopsupertea.com at 818-984-6100.
Hi, this is Joshua P. Warren, author of The Poor Man's Paranormal, and you're listening to the Paracast, the gold standard of paranormal radio.
After Micah Hanks finishes his explanation, I'm going to go back to my history and the experience with a friend of mine sitting at a hotel on New Year's Eve in the mid-60s, and he had a copy in his hands of a book called The Incomplete Enchanter. Go ahead, Micah.
Yeah, this is the real reason I like to come on the Paracast, because I hear so many great stories. And we get to hobnob because you guys enjoy the history like I do. Back to that point, again, we kind of went on a short trip through time at all the different kind of theories. And there are others that we didn't touch on. Ray Palmer's, Hollow Earth, Darrow's and Tarot's, all kinds of stuff like that. Really, I think, like you already outlined, Gene, some of those alternative hypotheses, you know, again, are far more seemingly impossible than the simple extraterrestrials getting in some kind of advanced craft and then traveling here. And this has really kind of been Stanton Friedman's argument and a number of others, that this, however far out it may seem, is actually far more plausible than a lot of ideas that have been raised about UFOs. And again, with respect to Jacques Vallée, I've enjoyed his writing for years. But when we really look at what the whole Mygonia idea represents in terms of ufology, a lot of people still aren't really sure. And I have to say, I'm kind of one of them. What exactly are we talking about? You know, reviewers at the time and, again, ufologists who read his work were kind of like, you know, this is seemingly and intentionally and even frustratingly vague. What are we talking about? So it seems natural to me that many would gravitate in terms of hypotheses toward ET, because it's pretty simple and nuts and bolts. It's easier to comprehend, and frankly, it just seems more likely in the sum total of the possibilities that exist if we aren't going to presume that these are just phenomena from somewhere here on Earth.
Well, let's get back to that alternate opinion. So Alan Greenfield is the guy who was with me, both teenagers. Obviously, what do we do on New Year's Eve? Get drunk, go downstairs and go to Times Square and watch the big ball come down? No. He's talking about this book and he's saying, what if, and this would make it for instantaneous travel, UFOs came from other dimensions? And maybe that other dimension has different laws of physics. So in the novel Incomplete Enchanter by L. Sprague de Camp and Fletcher Pratt, the other place that the protagonist went to, magic was enforced. That was the law. The laws of magic work there as opposed to our concepts of physics here. And then he came out with a publication called Alternate Horizons Newsletter to present this. At the same time all this is happening, we have Jacques Vallée's opinions about UFOs modifying. We know that what we would call maybe a 4.5D or 3.5D or 5.5D explanation was being looked at by Dr. J. Allen Hynek in his final years. I interviewed him probably in the mid-70s or late-70s. And I wish I had the recording of the interview, but it is lost in the sands of time. Anyway, he had moved away from strict ET, but I don't think he ever got a chance to define that.
Yeah, you know, when it comes to the idea that Hynek had wanted to move away, you know, there are some different, I guess, attitudes about that. I remember talking to Don Schmidt a few years ago, and he maintains that at the very end, Hynek had said something to him along the lines of, you know, I just can't imagine these things traveling from point A to point B. In other words, I think Don really wants to be of an opinion that Hynek had kind of come back around to the nuts and bolts idea. But we also know from Vallée's writing, I think Allan Hynek had really been someone who was an open-minded person. He's received some pushback, you know, especially in articles that have appeared in some skeptic magazines. I don't see why it's necessarily something that we should take issue with, but he apparently early on had bought books like Manly P. Hall's The Secret Teachings of All Ages. He had had an interest in esotericism at an early age. But what does he do? He goes on to become a scientist, and he's an astronomer who is tasked with advising the U.S. Air Force. And what had he been in those early years? He had been, I mean, really, by many standards, the arch skeptic. And so I think the real problem, not his early reading, you know, choice in reading material, I think the real problem people had with Hynek was that he didn't uphold what some view as those skeptical standards. He did become more open-minded as time went on. But, you know, again, I'm going to push back on the skeptical interpretation there and say that, in my view, really, Hynek was a great skeptic in the sense that he looked at what appeared to be a phenomena. He was in a unique position. He and Vallée, by the way, both were there at Northwestern back in the 60s especially, where they had access to what Blue Book was collecting, at least a majority of what Blue Book was collecting on UFOs at the time. They had the access to the data. They didn't ignore it. Hynek may have done that to an extent for a time, but over a period of several years, he became more and more convinced, look, I can't ignore this. There is a phenomena here. You know, again, it's fascinating reading if you go back and look at Vallée's Forbidden Science journals that he published back in the 90s, and then, of course, Anomalist books, republished those a few years ago, because even Vallée early on was looking at this in terms of ET. He had been theorizing about, you know, how close Mars is at various times and whether UFO visitations seem to spike in conjunction with the periods when Mars is closest to Earth. I mean, they were looking at this very much in terms of the possibility that these were ET visiting.
Okay, Micah, hang on here. Like, all right, so we get quite a bit of this here, but I'd like to back up just a little bit here now. We've got Hynek. You know the history of Hynek. If you're in ufology, you know how he started off as you call him, the arch skeptic. But what changed his view was his personal involvement in the investigations and time after time after time not being able to explain them all and talking to people in person who he believed sincerely had a very unusual experience that simply could not be explained, even though there should have been sufficient information to explain it. And he went on to, of course, write Close Encounters of the Third Kind, a UFO experience, right? So when you see his work, there's no question that he believed that alien visitation was a reality. He didn't know where it came from. But, I mean, if someone like Hynek could be convinced, why are you still on the fence?
Well, hold on now. Hynek again, let me back up to the previous point. Hynek had started as a skeptic, and looking at the data, he became convinced that there was something going on. Now, as we've already pointed out, he wavered, and this is the main point I was trying to make. He and Vallée early on both looked at this in terms of flesh and blood, nuts and bolts, ET visiting Earth. And then they became open to other possibilities because they began to find that there were problems with explaining this strictly in terms of simple ET visitation. Okay? Now, in terms of me not being convinced, let's be clear on what I'm not convinced about. Okay, I'm not convinced that we have a single conclusive source that we have now identified and that we can attribute UFOs to. we are still trying to understand what it is. Valet and Hynek were both trying to do that too, which is, in my opinion, the very reason for the shifting opinions throughout their careers about what UFOs might be, what their source might be. So, you know, again, I'm not the skeptic who says I'm not convinced there is a phenomena. Just like Hynek, just like Valet, I am convinced that based on the plethora of data that's been collected, not just, by the way, stuff that's been collected in the last 2 years and analyzed by the UAP Task Force, not just stuff going back to 2004 and whatever happened with the Nimitz carrier group. No, I'm talking about the sum total of data that's been collected throughout time, even prior to 1947. I think that it is a good case that is presented that there is a phenomena. But again, like Hynek and like Valet, I'm not certain what it is, and therefore, that's where my skepticism is. But
okay, so now what we've got to do here is we've got to look at this and go, okay, so they've entered UAP, you know, the great muddying of the waters in terms of what we're actually talking about. We had UFO, which was pretty bad itself. You know, Valet called it, you know, the most treacherous word, unidentified, you know, in that phrase. But we know what it meant because of the way they defined it and the way that it is looked at in popular culture. And all of the evidence says, okay, when we're talking about a UFO, we're talking about some kind of an alien craft. We don't know for sure where it came from, but alien meaning from beyond the boundaries and constructs of our civilization. So it could be interstellar. It's probably not interplanetary, which is what the estimate of the situation, and these were the best engineers at the time, concluded. So now we've, you know, enter UAP phenomenon.
We have this phenomenon to check out, and then more to come with Mike, Gene, and Randall. You're in
the Paracast.
Thank you for listening to GCN. Be sure to visit GCNlive.com today.
Do you need a website? Well, you can get a great deal on hosting services with Namecheap's legendary coupon code. They're offering substantial hosting discounts on shared hosting, business hosting, VPS hosting, reseller hosting, and even dedicated servers. Namecheap is preferred by millions. It's backed by a money-back guarantee. Use the coupon code LEGENDARY to cash in on the special deal at Namecheap.com, Namecheap.com.
First came Attack of the Rockoids, and it was a critically acclaimed success. And now there is The Coming of the Protectors. A former military intelligence man is contacted by a space woman in a dream. A dream that turns out to be a nightmare, because evil forces on her distant planet are planning to conquer the Earth. This is gripping science fiction of the classic kind. Attack of the Rockoids and The Coming of the Protectors. Find out more at Rockoids.com. That's Rockoids, Rockoids.com.
Silver has always been nature's very own antibiotic, and only one system allows you to generate an endless supply of natural silver solutions, SilverLungs.com. You'll find no wild claims or pseudoscience, just a lifetime of nano-sized pure silver solutions. The Silver Lungs generator allows you to make your own, so stop paying for silver solutions. The unique lung delivery system targets respiratory infections where other silver solutions simply cannot reach. See the Silver Lungs generator and lung delivery system at SilverLungs.com. That's SilverLungs.com.
Complement your health with hemp-derived cannabinoid oil. We've always believed that the closer to Earth, the better it is for our bodies. Our hemp-derived cannabinoid oil is phytocannabinoid-rich, full-spectrum, and organically grown. Finally, hemp made easy, clean, and effective. GCNHemp.com or call 877-878-4203. That's right, we cut through the red tape. It's now available at GCNHemp.com or call 877-878-4203.
It's been tough talking to my doctor about constipation with belly pain, discomfort, and bloating. I finally laid all my symptoms out there and how they keep coming back. She said I may have irritable bowel syndrome with constipation, or IBS-C. We agreed it's time to try something different.
Linzess, or linaclotide, is a prescription medicine that treats IBS-C in adults. Linzess works differently than laxatives. It lets you have more frequent and complete bowel movements and helps relieve overall abdominal symptoms, belly pain, discomfort, and bloating. These symptoms were studied in combination, not individually. Do not give Linzess to children less than 6, and it should not be given to children 6 to less than 18. It may harm them. Do not take Linzess if you have a bowel blockage. Get immediate help if you develop unusual or severe stomach pain, especially with bloody or black stools. The most common side effect is diarrhea, sometimes severe. If it's severe, stop taking Linzess and call your doctor right away. Other side effects include gas, stomach area pain, and swelling. There could be more to your story with IBS-C. Visit a doctor in person or online. Say yes to Linzess. Learn more at Linzess.com or call 1-800-LINZESS. Sponsored by Abbvie and Ironwood Pharmaceuticals.
Get healthy, not high, with 100% pure CBD powerful natural pain relief from Veterans Vitality. GCN listeners, have you ever thought about how CBD may help you? I'm sure you have heard about the many benefits of CBD. Well, here's your opportunity to try before you buy. Created by veterans and for everyone who deserves better choices, our CBD is derived from organic hemp, grown in the USA, and third-party tested. Veterans Vitality CBD saves you as much as 25 to 50% over our competition, and a portion of all sales is contributed to veteran nonprofits and events. Many of our customers have experienced improved quality of life, help with anxiety, PTSD, and overall well-being. Our products do not contain THC. They are safe, non-addictive, effective, and 100% legal. GCN listeners, get your free trial bottle of premium CBD by simply paying shipping and handling at GCNFreeCBD.com. That's GCNFreeCBD.com. Again, GCNFreeCBD.com. Offered by Veterans Vitality Premium CBD.
This is me, the Merciless. You are listening to the Paracast, the gold standard of paranormal radio, exactly according to my plan.
So Randall is busy telling Micah some things about different interpretations of what UFOs, UAPs mean. Go ahead.
Right. So what we need to do is, and this is really a part of the problem in the field itself and the general public, is the difference between a phenomena versus an object. Because if you're just talking about phenomena, then it can be a whole range of other things besides craft or objects. Right. So sure, when we're talking about UFO reports, there's a whole variety of phenomena that the subject in the UFO report might be besides a UFO or alien craft. Let's just do away with all of the rest when we're talking about UFOs. And like Stan Friedman said, he said, let's just call them what they are. What we're really interested in are flying saucers. We're interested in alien craft, alien visitation. It's not like the rest isn't interesting. It is. It could be very scientifically interesting. But the question we want to know is, are we being visited by aliens from somewhere? Maybe they're interstellar, maybe they're intergalactic, maybe they're transuniversal. We're not sure. So let's just forget the rest and go, okay.
These are really great points. And, you know, Randall, again, I'm really glad that you brought all that up, because I'm with you. I have some issues with all the different terms that have been used for this phenomena or these objects. Like yourself, when we're talking about what might be alien craft technology, I am like you. I like the use of objects because, again, this goes maybe all the way back to Kant, or even earlier than that, in fact. But philosophically, I can say that we are talking about the human perception of what we take to be a tangible manifestation in our environment.
Okay. Exactly. Something that's objectively real, like object and an objective and objectively real, right. Something that radar waves bounce off of.
Yes.
And has weight and exists like any other material that we're familiar with in the universe. Constructed a little differently, but that's what it is.
Right. Yes, exactly. Now, you know, now there would be some modern scientists who would say, well, no. We need to stick with UAP, unidentified aerial phenomena, because we could be talking about a number of things. They would further probably point to the recent preliminary assessment by the UAP task force, and they would say, look, they broke it down into several categories of different things that might constitute UAP. But now, again, I think we're all on the same page here that the ones that interest us, I mean, I'm actually interested with, you know, like ball lightning. Gene's been down to Brown Mountain. I've been down there a few times. I think that those are interesting, but those are, let's make this very clear. those don't appear to have anything to do with the kinds of technological objects of unknown provenance that we're talking about here.
So, exactly. And you're with the Debrief as well, which is a really good website. Like, I go there and check things out when I want to see what kind of the latest thing is that you guys are coming up with. I go there and check it out, and would encourage anyone else to do the same, because you guys also get into military technology and our own technology, which is really advancing rapidly now and could be easily confused with a UFO.
Yeah. Again, that's more the case now than ever before. As our technology improves and thereby appears to maybe reach a point where it is, in some ways, some of our technologies maybe are now becoming similar to what people, pilots, you know, and others, military members, civilians, whatever, have observed now for decades. But now, in my opinion, something that is left out of a lot of the modern dialogue about all this is the history of this phenomena and how long people have seen it. And again, there I go using phenomena. As you can see, humans, I think, are going to inherently have a hard time grasping with what to call something when they don't know what it is exactly. Even our apparent conclusion, our provisional conclusion that these represent technologies and therefore they are objects, again, I would say, but can we call them flying objects? That's part of the problem with the UFO thing. I'm not so sure that these things fly as we recognize flight. You know, it's more like they are UMOs, you know, unidentified moving objects. They can move through the air, but they can also move through water and go into the oceans, or at least that's what many people report having observed them do. So, but UMO, I guess, doesn't roll off the tongue like UFO. So let's present a quick argument for why we should maybe just call them UFOs for the time being. A lot of people don't like UAP. They don't like reinventing the wheel. And I think you're right, Randall, to an extent that does muddy the waters because it seems to kind of widen the playing field. If anything, many want to see us narrow it a little bit, not draw premature conclusions, but let's
try. Yeah, it gives them a major bunch of escape hatches to say, well, yeah. Well, it's weird, but it's not aliens. And so this is why when we use the term UFO in ufology, as ufologists, we can look back and we can go, well, the USAF created the term, and when you sift it all down, it doesn't leave any room for anything else but an alien craft. And when you combine that with all of the cultural expectations of what the word carries, we don't have to take the words that make up the acronym literally. We can use the definition and just say, well, UFO is an alien craft, okay? It's not just some weird phenomena. It's some kind of thing. Transport device that is coming from we don't know where.
Yes, precisely, exactly. And that, again, I've seen Kevin Randall make kind of similar arguments. In my opinion, it might be better at this point, so that within the field of ufology we know what we're talking about, it might be better to actually just stick with UFO so that we have a clearer idea in the historical sense of the usage of that term. I've called it an acronym, and people take issue with that. But again, let's remember that Ruppelt said pronounce it UFO, so it effectively would be an acronym, not just an abbreviation.
And I love that. Actually, I've been trying to tell myself to start using UFO as the term, because it is a word. It's not simply just an acronym. It's kind of both. And yeah, there's usage that goes along with it. But these are nuances that you have to be in the field to really appreciate.
I agree.
People can say, okay, well, radar, what does that even mean, right? Well, you can go with the acronym, it's radio detection and ranging. Well, oh, well, you know, what does that mean? We're detecting radios out on the range? Well, that's not a radar. You know, and that's the same argument that the skeptics use to say that UFOs are simply just unidentified, right? It's so superficial. But well, people buy it because they don't know.
Well, let me just point out one more thing, too. You have repeatedly said alien, seemingly preferential over ET, which I also like, and I'll tell you why. Because, again, many people seem to misunderstand what we mean when we say alien. To say something is alien does not necessarily mean that it is extraterrestrial, i.e., a form of biological life from another world. Alien,
exactly.
Alien simply means we don't recognize it. It is non-human in the context, again, of ufology. Please understand what we're saying. But again, Randall continuing to say alien, I think, is yet again another term, although it has its own baggage and stigmas. It maybe is one of the better potential descriptors when we're talking about this phenomena. So yeah, I'm with you on that one too.
Well, I picked that straight out of biology, basically, because when you're talking about an alien species, you're talking about a reference to something originating from outside the environment in which it is found.
Yes.
Right? And so that suits it. That doesn't say necessarily that it's interplanetary or interstellar. You know, the ETH is an umbrella term for a whole bunch of things. Right. I think Interstellar is probably the most reasonable of the alien explanations. But, you know, maybe like yourself, I can't say that for sure. But I can say for sure that we're being visited by aliens, right?
Well, you know, again, there is a strong possibility, at least I would say, and that seems like a likely conclusion to me. But again, now, the modern adherence of a UAP phenomena, many of them would differ. As we have seen in recent days, a lot of op-eds appearing in magazines and online saying, you know, all of this alien conspiracy theorizing needs to stop. That's not what the UAP task force says they're looking at. They're looking at possible aerospace threats, and so therefore Russia or China. But guys, look, two quick points. Did you see what happened with the recent docking of a Russian spacecraft with the ISS and the calamity that ensued? Also, the uncontrolled reentry of a Chinese satellite in recent days. Both of these instances, NASA and other agencies have really, you know, kind of raised issues with these, you know, with these countries and their spacecraft. And this, is, of course, has caused some friction. But my point is, if they aren't capable of even controlling their aircraft, as well as those operated by the United States and its space program, do we really believe that they have technology that appears to be decades in advance of the best that we have? I just don't buy that. I don't.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. What do you think, Gene?
You know, I kind of like to stay agnostic about final answers to UFOs. It makes me sound obscure and strange, but that's my middle name. But seriously speaking, when I look at all this, I think we're still maybe going a step ahead of ourselves. And at that point, we find ourselves back in the old ufology, which is, let's, you know, look for ET and let's look for all the other stuff. And that's where, of course, the Pentagon UAP task force is focused. You know, there's no evidence that ET is visiting us, but there's no evidence there isn't a presence of ET. More to come with Jim Randall. And Micah, you're in the Paracast.
Thank you for listening to GCN. Visit GCNlive.com today.
Hey, listeners. I want you to have the entire Paracast experience. So I'd like to tell you about After the Paracast. After the Paracast is an exclusive feature for subscribers to the Paracast Plus. With After the Paracast, you never know what's going to happen next. After the Paracast features color commentary, special interviews, and further conversations with Paracast guests. With Paracast Plus, you can download a very special enhanced version of the Paracast also. We do offer exclusive music, videos, and more features are coming. To get more info about subscribing, please visit theparacast.plus. Once again, theparacast.plus. Prices are just $1.50 a week, less than a cup of coffee at your local convenience store. Check out theparacast.plus to learn more about Paracast Plus.
For over 20 years, Extendivite has been helping people. Here is a testimonial from Amazon.com. Glad I found this product. I am 51 years old and started getting headaches a couple of times a week. I went to the doctor and my blood pressure was a little high at around 150 over 95. I found out about Extendivite and I ordered some to try it. Immediately, I felt better, and it lowered my blood pressure and my headaches went away almost instant. I have been taking it now for about 4 months, and I am so glad I found this product. You won't be disappointed. Extendivite is only $69.95 for a 2-month supply. To order, call 1-877-928-8822 or visit heartdrop.com. That's HEARTDROP.com.
Extend your life with Extend.